And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Film Fracas. I am your host, Carter. Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? Spilliards. We're talking Harry Potter. And with me, I have Robbie, the...
Percival
Wolfric. Yes. Percival Wolfric Brian DeShazer.
Yes.
Brett, the Sorcerer's Stone Johnson.
Happy to be here.
And Shannon...
Philosopher's Stone for all you Brits out there.
Hippogriff Widener?
Sure.
No.
What was it? It wasn't that. I don't remember what it was. No.
Does anybody remember what my name was? Because I sure don't.
Something Harry Pottery. No.
Right? The Golden Snitch?
The Golden Snitch
Widener?
Wouldn't that be my inaugural? I thought it was the Golden Snitch.
I thought it was something
Quidditch related. We're going to take a break and figure this out.
Quidditch Widener?
Sure.
Shannon, appropriately Harry Potter themed name Widener.
That works.
That sounds exactly right.
Insert Harry Potter name here.
That was it.
We'll just go back and edit it and it'll just be like, she's this thing.
The bad dub. It's like Shannon McGonagall Widener.
Favorite Hogwarts professor. I wouldn't be upset with that. But okay, cool. That can
Flitwick.
Be me.
It's Leviosa, not Leviosa Widener.
Okay, sure.
Actually, that's a good one.
That was not
that
too
is,
bad.
That is a good one. I like that.
I kind of think that's better than whatever else we had.
Yeah, I mean, it
obviously wasn't memorable, yeah.
It clearly was not memorable.
It's fine. But, we've only been doing almost this entire season. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah,
all right.
We're almost to the end of the season.
Anywho, we're on our penultimate.
Our
penultimate episode. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Still talking Harry Potter.
Still.
The HP man. Yeah. We're talking score.
The best of them.
The best of the scores. We're here.
Just anyone.
We're in our final four.
Best.
We will be ranking the scores from best to worst.
Score to score four. And score.
But before we get into the fracas, I know you love it when we interrupt the show, interrupt the good flow we have going here. This episode's coming out on February 27th of 2019,
mm-hmm.
for anyone listening in the future, which means that tomorrow, as of then, is February 28th, 2019. Which would make it a full 365 days since our first episode of the show came out, which is, I think, at the very least, a milestone that we haven't killed each other yet.
Yeah. So. Well, except for Phoenix. That's really why he hasn't come back.
Yeah.
It was always.
I mean, we revived his corpse to episodes of Star Wars.
That was when he had left then, and then he came back, and then we killed him.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I don't have the facts straight, so I can't testify.
I mean, I can't either. I don't know what you're talking about. Phoenix who? I've never met a Phoenix.
But that leads us into... There are so many people we need to thank for everything that has happened in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, you know, Phoenix Zarola, thank you so much for helping us kick off the first two seasons of this show. Thank you to Shannon for filling in when we got to season four.
Absolutely.
Joining on.
Yeah, joining on,
just filling in,
making this show better than what it was, mm-hmm. and adding very, very interesting conversation that the three of us nerds couldn't do on our own.
Thank you for bringing sophistication.
Oh.
Clearly.
And thinking ahead.
Thank you to everyone who's ever guested on the show, Austin Zessen, Graham Gora, who's guest hosted several times at this point, Avery Eccles, who else has been a guest on the show? Is that it?
Yes.
As of currently.
Because Shannon had guessed it, and then she joined.
Shannon had guessed it, yeah. Well, you don't get a thanks for guesting, Shannon.
Yeah, no.
Because you're,
double.
I feel like the hosting. Yeah.
Thank you to Permanent Record Studios here in Austin and
Shedquarters.
Who have graciously hosted us and let us record when we wanted to do something a little fancier. Thank you to everyone who lives at the house that Carter and I occupy for letting us record at the kitchen table.
Yes, too many times.
Thank you to Brett's roommate for letting us record in his living room sometimes. Future thank you to anyone that lives with Shannon for maybe ever letting us record there. But yeah, also, I mean, clearly, thank you to Carter Spilliards and Brett Johnson for, you know, turning this idea into something that is real and listenable and hopefully brings a smile to people's faces every week.
I hope so.
And finally, thank you to all of you who
thank you to listeners.
Listened, yes. Donated, tweeted about it, bought a shirt.
Bought merch. Thank you, Mom.
Yeah, Carter's mom.
For buying that mug.
Hey, the mug did exist.
It does. She's got one. We also have a throw pillow.
We've got not up for sale anymore.
No, I know. We've got the throw pillow, and it's sitting on my bed at home.
We have what?
Do you cuddle it at night?
No. It is a comfy pillow. That's a nice pillow.
It's a surprisingly comfy pillow.
Yeah, we had a throw pillow.
I went and I found it, and Shannon's Harry Potter name was the Golden Snitch.
The Golden Snitch, Widener? I think we came up with better ones. Yeah.
Where I don't feel like I knew that.
You know, it's fine. Thank you, Robbie, for also being a good host and helping out with so much.
Yeah, I wasn't like sitting here queuing that up. But, I'm not.
Well, I thought I would do it. Actually, no. You know, no. Thank you. You can leave.
You know what? Yeah. No. And thank you to every movie. Every movie that's won every season. So, what
Silence
won?
Of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs.
Beauty and the Beast. Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
The Lion King.
Last Jedi.
And whatever happens next week.
Thank you to Survivor for, you know, existing and having a format from which we can, you know, be inspired by.
We were inspired
and
by
then I guess every top 10 channel on YouTube for.
Also, thank you to thank you to podcasts for existing, without which we would not be here.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, Steve Jobs.
Thank you for the passage of time, or else we couldn't have hit a year.
Yeah. Have we thanked everything and everyone?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we have.
Well, that's sufficient.
I think it's okay to move on.
We can move on from that. Seriously, though, thank you guys so, so much for spending your time with us. Every time we hear feedback, good or bad, it reminds us that we really enjoy doing this. So thank you guys so much. Let's get into the fracas.
Will it even be a fracas? Me. I'm so glad that you were nice enough to pick me. All right. So we're talking score, right? And
rank and score 1 through 4.
Rank and scores. Our remaining movies are Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Order of the Phoenix, Sorcerer's Stone, and Deathly Hallows Part 1. My favorite score out of the bunch surprised me a little bit, and it could just be, you know, how I was feeling that day. But I actually went with Order of the Phoenix as my number one.
We'll see how I'm feeling.
To me, it was like, I really like the score. I was listening to it, and I was like, this one's so just different from all the other ones, but also very similar, that I was like, this is trying so many, like, it's such an influx of, like, new stuff, while also retaining kind of the old feel and themes of other Harry Potter movies. And I think that the score itself fits the movie very well, because I think this is a really well-paced movie. And you kind of feel that in the score. And so I thought the score very kind of complemented the film itself. And so both of those things, I kind of surprised myself. But I ended up jamming out the most to this one. So things like Umbridge's theme, fireworks.
Friggin' slaps, which I always forget about. Yeah. Umbridge's theme. It's quite good.
But they're super, I mean, there's just so much good stuff. The Possession is beautiful.
The Ministry of Magic.
Ministry of Magic theme is great. Everything about this, I was like, because up until that point, or at least in the movies that we're still talking about, like there were definitely new things, and then there's also new stuff in Deathly Hallows Part 1. But to me, this was the most different sounding, to the point that they actually were like trying to do something new, and that I really appreciate, and so that's why it's my number one.
So, Carter, I couldn't agree with you more, actually. Order of the Phoenix is my number one. I thought I was going to have to fight for it more. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. People like what they like. I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I was expecting it to be my number two. Before I go into any of these episodes, I make kind of just like my, based off my memory list, in case I don't ever get a chance to think about things before I come in, which is probably not the best way to do it, but whatever. So I kind of ordered it, and I was like, Order of the Phoenix, if I can remember, is not the best, but it's not the worst. I put it at like number two. I was like, I feel safe with that. I listened to it and immediately flipped around some stuff. I think, like you said, fireworks, slaps, Umbridge's beam.
Flight of the Order of the Phoenix is fantastic.
That's such a good one. And so here's where I was at, because I thought, you know, after the John Williams scores, I thought they may have started to kind of get generic or something like that, just because I wasn't, you know, remembering any like crazy themes or anything that like were new or anything. But what I will say is, like, Umbridge's theme is amazing. All the stuff with Sirius is fantastic in this one. I will also give it, like, this fits the movie so well. Like, it runs the gamut of emotions the same way Harry does. Like,
you're crazy high up with firework. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
there's a freaking guitar. Yeah,
like, the guitar solo. Like, it's such a metal song. And it works so well because it's the only, like, definitive moment of joy within that movie. It's just this like unbridled freedom that is captured so well. I couldn't think of a better instrumentation for the Weasley twins. Like, it works.
The Weasley twins are metal.
Like, they are metal. They are an electric guitar,
or at the very least, punk rock. Like,
they're very punk rock. I could stand by.
You have to think this was the mid '90s.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes. And also,
are you telling me that the Weasley twins listen to a lot of Chumbawamba?
Probably.
He drinks a whiskey drink. He drinks a lager drink.
I'm not saying they weren't, but this is something we need to tweet at J.K. Rowling.
Yes, I was thinking the exact same thing.
But Dumbledore's Army, I can
like, good.
Can you listen to that track?
Rumor requirement.
Is that the requirement? If I'm trying to remember correctly, Dumbledore's Army is the scene where everyone's getting their Patronus is right. And he's walking around. And he's like, I know you can do it. Like,
I'm a teacher.
There's also like,
but like, you can feel that energy.
There's an energy. It's forward moving all the time.
This movie's got a lot of good montages, and it's got a lot of good montage music.
It definitely does. So that being said, good first pick. I'm proud to say it's my number one. So
Brett.
All right. Coming in here. Gonna hit you with something. My number one. Was Order of the Phoenix.
Oh, shit.
Oh!
just because, like, for the fact that, like, it is so different without being, like, over the top or, like, too much or bad. None of these scores are bad. I did enjoy some of these more than others, but Order of the Phoenix, I was listening to it, and I was like, oh, wow, like, this is so much different. I didn't remember there being, like, fucking, like, shredding and screeching and fireworks, and I was like, oh, this is what's happening, going along. And I remember listening to it, I think I can, like, count on my fingers, like, the number of times I heard, like, the Harry Potter theme, like, mixed into things, which, like, really caught me off guard. I was like, oh, hey, there's the theme. Whoa, it's in there. Whereas with the other movies, some more than others, it's a lot more prevalent, a lot more reused. And so I really liked how, like, they used it, like, very sparingly, and it really, like, punctuated and accented some big moments and just, like, I'm not sure what I can say that hasn't already been said, but it's very different. There's a whole lot of good stuff. There were a lot of moments where I was like, oh, what's going on here? And I'd look at the track name and be like, oh, yeah, I can totally see that. Whereas with some other ones, I'd be like, I don't know what's going on here. Oh, that's going on? Sure, okay. But, it was good. It was real good.
I don't know if I mentioned it on mic during this season at all. There was when I was looking for which version of Hedwig's theme to use for the season opener for our instrumental music at the beginning. I didn't realize that Order of the Phoenix, that the track Another Story was their version of it used a lot. So I didn't pick it. So I picked Lumos from the Prisoner of Azkaban score. And I may have said it on mic that I think is my favorite version of Hedwig's theme. If I did, I've definitely said it to you guys either off mic or on mic. But I may have changed my mind after listening to this one. I think Another Story may do it in a more interesting way with a better arrangement and set of instrumentation that makes it feel fresh while also familiar. So just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah.
Like Coke with lemon. Refreshing, but a little familiar.
Yeah. Like a hot Dr. Pepper.
No, that's bad.
Hot Dr. Pepper.
That's bad, Robbie.
Is good.
I like hot Dr. Pepper.
Thank you.
But only when I'm sick.
When you don't know any better.
I mean, Dr. Pepper was a pharmaceutical.
It was.
quite literally.
You know what else was a pharmaceutical? Heroin.
And cocaine. Well.
Moving on. Oh, Shannon, what did you pick for number one? What did
you pick for number one?
So, my number one pick was actually not the Order of the Phoenix, but it was not too far off the mark. It was my number two pick. My number one pick was The Prisoner of Azkaban. I think that the only reason that I picked Prisoner of Azkaban over Order of the Phoenix is I feel like it's able to use the familiar and have so many diverse themes in the same vein. I think the blending is a little more seamless. That's what it came down to for me. For me, it's been my favorite score for a while. And kind of getting into listening to music scores again, I always go back to The Prisoner of Azkaban. So Aunt Marge's Waltz, can we start with that? I mean,
it's a good one.
It is a good one.
It begins and ends the credit scene so well. The Night Bus, which is, abrasive and weird and kooky and fits the look, the feel, everything of The Night Bus.
Got a manic jazz sound to it.
Exactly. I mean, it feels chaotic, which Buck is beats that.
Flight.
Not even,
Double Trouble, which we've mentioned before on the pod.
Yes, absolutely. Let's see. I'm not sure if it's the Whomping Willow and the Snowball fight or...
I liked that one. I will say I liked that one a lot because of the duality. You could tell which part was the Whomping Willow and which part was the Snowball fight because they had
definitely
good instrumentation that revolved around the same themes, but felt a lot lighter than the other.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Saving Buckbeak and then the Dementors Converge. If you were to pick that piece apart sonically, because you've got the horn theme that comes back frequently, and it's on top of the weird kind of blended choral sound. I don't know what kind of chord that would be, but it's very kind of abrasive, but also kind of major. It's something that confuses the hell out of me, but it still feels so right for that scene, which is, ranking-wise, probably one of the biggest, most pivotal moments in the Harry Potter arc. Being able to cast that kind of magic, cementing him as a big... as not just the kid who survived, but the person who's actually pretty good with, defensive magic. And the credit sequence
going
too.
From the boy who lived to the hero.
Yeah, I was gonna say Mischief Managed might be my favorite end credits.
It's a good end credits.
It's really good.
In general, it's a good end credits to the movie.
It's some great ending credits in the movie itself. But the music I think is probably my favorite. Also, the Patronus light.
Yes.
I love a lot. It's the very kind of choral, ethereal feeling. I love it a great deal.
There's not much that I can say against.
Don't tell me that John Williams has written a score where he hasn't just flat out described what's going on when it's as in the werewolf scene.
Yes.
I like
the title of the track is The Werewolf Scene.
I like I quite enjoy Quidditch. The Quidditch third year, because especially it's nice having two John Williams themes we're discussing, because he has the Quidditch theme in Sorcerer's Stone, and Quidditch third year is the same theme but with a variation, and I just love that it's that through line that he has, bringing it back, and he does a really good job with that on the Star Wars movies too.
Yes,
we talked about him quite a bit last season, but
so what that sounds like to me.
Simple Majority is going to go to the Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah. So we'll put Order of the Phoenix at number one.
Number two, Carter.
My number two is The Prisoner of Azkaban. To me, very much like what Shannon said, I think it does a great job of blending seamlessly. It has a lot of because with Sorcerer's Stone, you had kind of all the establishing the themes and stuff. Chamber of Secrets, he didn't really add that much new music to it. It's a lot of the same stuff. There's a couple of new pieces with Gilderoy Lockhart and the Chamber of Secrets, but there's not overall that much new stuff with it. And then this one, you can tell he was like, all right, I'm going to flex my muscles a little bit. Let's add some new stuff. Let's make it different. It really comes through, and I absolutely love it. I think... this is probably of the Williams scores, out of those three for Harry Potter. It's easily my favorite. I think it's his most sophisticated. It's his most innovative. And so I really enjoy it. And we were talking about some standout ones, but yeah, and I think the music, I mean, the music with all of these movies, I think fits really well. Sometimes you have iconic themes and stuff and it's like, you love the music because it's iconic, but when you're actually watching the movie, you can kind of give or take how well it actually fits into, you know, that moment. But with Harry Potter, I think the entire score, like top to bottom, because like you link to like Jurassic Park and like the Jurassic Park theme, when it's in the movie, you're like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. But like the rest of the score throughout the entire film, you're like, I'm not necessarily thinking about this all the time. But for me, like all the Harry Potter movies, the entire score, the entire movie, you're like, that's really good. And so when you listen to the score kind of separate from it, you kind of see that. I get a lot of the, I'm listening to the score and I'm like, oh, I remember this part, because the music's all very kind of distinctive scene to scene. So I loved Prisoner of Azkaban and it is my number two pick.
Ditto. I guess I'll talk about, I mean, everything you said. I want to just talk about the John Williams scores for a second, because I feel like that's the territory we're about to get into, and why I put Prisoner of Azkaban above Sorcerer's Stone, because I had a hard time listening to Sorcerer's Stone and saying, wow, there are so many moments that are, you know, so vivid in your head. The library scene is like, it sticks in there. Hearing that music, you're like, oh my God, like I can imagine. Feel like I'm walking with Harry through the library in the invisibility cloak. The Mirror of Erised, like everything in it is a generally good score, except for the parts where it sounds like a Star Wars prequel score. And that's especially in Quidditch. You get the theme for a bit, you get the Quidditch theme for a bit, you get it, and then it kind of sounds like the space battle over Coruscant or something like. Anything else from the Star Wars prequels, it's a lot of the same instrumentation, it's a lot of the same little just like moments and, you know, little flits of piccolos and flutes and stuff like that that are present throughout a lot of John Williams scores, which I even found were kind of present in Prisoner of Azkaban at times, which is why I put Order of the Phoenix over it. But I don't know, I like the John Williams scores, I like Sorcerer's Stone. I can't, listening to Prisoner of Azkaban and listening to Sorcerer's Stone, there's no contest there. It's just, even if you just, if everything was the same, but you just had Double Trouble and the Night Bus, I feel like you've got a 10 times just stronger, more experimental, I think just flexing, you know, taking someone who, you know, John Williams could have just done the same thing a third time and everyone would have said, yeah, that's about what it was. But I think he took a lot more care with that one, is what it feels like. He took the time to look and see how this movie was different from the two that preceded it and, you know, appropriately made a score that fit that. So number two for me, Prisoner of Azkaban. Brett?
My number two is going to surprise you. It is The Prisoner of Azkaban.
I'm surprised.
Sight. But, was really, after listening to the Sorcerer's Stone and being like, yep, this is a John Williams score for sure, then listening to Prisoner of Azkaban, I actually had to think, I was like, oh, wait, did John Williams do this one too? And I was like, oh, damn,
it's he did. Very cool. Different, yeah.
And, like, it is really different. But then, like, as soon as I found that out, there were some moments where I was like, oh no, yeah, this is John Williams, all right. There were a lot of parts.
Oh, John.
It was like, kind of like we joked about a little earlier. It's like different yet familiar, except like a lot more on the familiar end of things, but still really good. I love the Toil and Trouble because I didn't know there were other lyrics to that other than Something Wicked This Way Comes. And that got me thinking about this old Macbeth movie we watched back in high school English that had Patrick Stewart and the witches started rapping Toil and Trouble. And it was like, what? Anyway, I digest.
Would you have preferred that they did this track from The Prisoner of Azkaban?
I honestly don't care. But it just got me thinking about
that. You know.
It's a nice little side
It's story. Fine.
But no, it's really good. I liked how they utilized the Double Trouble theme more than the Harry Potter theme, which I thought was a real nice change of pace. Still got repetitive by the end of things, but it was utilized so in such so many different ways that I was a little more forgiving. But like, yeah, I don't know what I could say that hasn't already been said between the two of you guys. But yeah, Prisoner of Azkaban number two.
The double trouble theme is definitely, it maybe overstays its welcome a little bit. I don't know, but like it, I think it is a versatile theme for sure for the movie because it works as kind of, oh, it's kind of the kooky little like night bus and a biting book side of the of things. But it's also like when slowed down, like it's the sinister side that is, you know, like the unknown of Sirius Black and the Dementors and like, you know, and the lyrics clearly and, you know, they do somewhat reflect the idea that there is trouble brewing in Hogwarts. So,
yeah.
Overall, good theme. Solid second place for me. Sorry, Shannon, if it...
Oh, no. I mean, I'm very happy with where both of these ended up. I mean, especially... Okay, one more plug for the Order of the Phoenix, just because we haven't talked about this. I don't think we've talked about this piece that much. So, Loved Ones and Leaving... I used to sleep on a whole lot, but listening to it again with the visuals of the end, because the end, I feel like, of the Order of the Phoenix gets a lot of hate because it's, you know, the screenplay and the script, the lines that are being spoken individually by Daniel Radcliffe are kind of tacky. But I think that piece wraps it together in a calm, like, hopeful, majestic way that the words... can't really get at and don't that fall a little flat with, and I do really like that piece a lot. It is very swelling and great, and okay, I'm done. That was my spiel for Loved Ones and Leaving.
It's good. It's very good.
It's good. It's very calming and contemplative. Okay, what did everyone have for three? This is where it's going to get interesting.
Actually, before we get on to our number three, we're going to take a quick little break. Thank you, guys. Welcome back to the podcast. So yeah, when we left off, Shannon was starting to kick off our round three, and I will let her continue doing that. Shannon?
My number three pick was kind of difficult. But as of right now, my number three pick is Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, actually.
Ooh.
I think it is because originally when listening or when I was about to listen to the score, I was like, okay, this is just how many shades of dark can we get? How much minor music can I listen to in one sitting? But there's more to it with that score. There's so much more nuance. I'm a big fan of stringed instrumentation and the fact that, you know, these... It's a dark movie, y'all, okay? There's not going to be an easy way to insert a very light, happy, interesting, edgy theme. And I think that movie is very unapologetic about that fact. And it's still, what is it? Alexandre Desplat does a good job of still making his music very interesting and fitting all of these different scenes. I'm a big fan of rescuing Hermione. And the very first piece, Obliviate, and going into Snape to Malfoy Manor, there's motion in this music that gives a sense of urgency that is thematically defining throughout this entire movie. And I was listening, and not to say that I don't love the OG Sorcerer's Stone score, because it is iconic for a reason. It is the foundation for this entire series. All of these themes established by John Williams are forever cemented in the minds of like an entire generation, if not the entire world. Everybody could sing Hedwig's theme. But I like the fact that Alexandre Desplat does something different. Critically, I think it did pretty well. I was a fan of this score. I don't know if I was feeling really moody, edgy recently, but... I also was listening to the first Sorcerer's Stone on my way back to Austin, and there's a lot of, I don't know, maybe it was the quality of the acoustics in my car, but I'm like trying to get, there were some lulls in a lot of the pieces, and I'm like, okay, where's the actual melody line here? I'm not sure if it's just me, but I felt myself like, okay, after getting all of the establishing themes, I'm like, okay, where is everything else? But that was, it was very close. It was really very close. It was going to come down to whatever I was feeling right now at the moment. Just because I enjoy both scores immensely. And, you know, there's so much good in both of them. But I think it came down to 7 being my number 3 pick this week. Somebody else?
Yeah. So my number 3 pick was also Deathly Hallows Part 1. To me, this score is, in a word, dense. It's got... Thick. It's thick. Dome thick score. It's got so many layers. It's a very, like you said, nuanced. It's got a lot of nuance, and like the instrumentation and the arrangement, it's so layered that there's just a lot to unpack, and it's a very mature piece of music. Not that the other ones are immature, but this one especially, it's like you listen to it and you're like, this feels very, very kind of orchestral and very kind of raw and not as polished as some of the other ones. And it, to me, it fits the movie very well. I think where that movie meanders, the score meanders, I think there are several... standout tracks. I love Snape going to Malfoy Manor. Obliviate's really good. I love that he reused the Ministry of Magic theme from Order of the Phoenix and made it even like darker. Dobby was a really good one. Yeah, the Locket, when they destroy the Locket, is great. Mm-hmm. The Deathly Hallows was a good one that plays with the story of the three brothers. And it's, yeah, so I absolutely, I mean, I love all of these scores. There wasn't one this week that I was like, man, that one's not as good. And it to me, this one, I think it's not as, you know, fun on its own to listen to as much as the other two are. And I don't think it's quite as much captures the spirit. This one's also very real. This feels like a very like real movie score, like something that would, it has a lot of tracks that could belong on like a drama or something like that. Not necessarily, you don't necessarily get the like magic whiz bang of Harry Potter in every single track, which is fine because this is a very dark film. But I think, you know, comparing it to the other ones, it brings it down a little bit. But yeah, it does, I think, appropriately create the mood of Deathly Hallows Part 1, which is really what a score should do. So I think it hits on all accounts. It's just, for me, not quite as good as the other two. But a strong number 3. Rami?
Y'all, I hate the Deathly Hallows soundtrack. I'm going to be honest. It's dense. It doesn't sound like Harry Potter to me. It sounds way too fucking generic, if I'm being honest. You brought it up, like the most Harry Potter moment to me in it was the Ministry of Magic, like reuse of that theme, and that cemented that I liked Order of the Phoenix best. When it comes to ranking our final two that are left here, and other than the fact that I just was not into the score, I see its musical merits. I just, when you compare it to the other three that are all together are doing something that is not just another movie score. It is, you know, scoring a Harry Potter movie. And this one is darker. And I agree with a lot of your points, Carter. And I get what you're saying about it. I don't feel the same way about it. I feel like you have to give credit where credit's due, in the sense that, yes, we're all used to Hedwig's theme, but like, this is the score that made Hedwig's theme. This is the score that did, you know, create those moments like Harry in the library, the Mirror of Erised, the chamber where the stone is hidden. All of those moments feeling, you know, I can listen to Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone soundtrack and I can feel like I'm in the movie. I can imagine those moments. And for the most part, when I'm listening to Deathly Hallows Part 1 soundtrack, I feel like I can tell when they're running. And they do a lot of fucking running in that movie. So, I mean, I listened to it, and maybe I didn't get to the deeper parts like Shannon was talking about. But I was like, okay, it's dark. It's a dramatic Harry Potter movie. But I also think that, you know, Order of the Phoenix is a darker, dramatic Harry Potter movie. and it's able to have, and while like the movie itself provides those fun moments, it provides, you know, Umbridge as a character is kind of fun to look at and to like observe. So her theme is a little more fun. The Weasleys leaving is clearly a very fun moment. It does those dark moments. It does Sirius's death. It does, you know, the Department of Prophecies and the stuff like that and the possession. And it does it in a way that is dark, but still feels so true to the Harry Potter movies and so true to the movie that it's scoring. And I just don't get that with Deathly Hallows Part 1. I get dramatic. I get a little bit of suspense. And I get what is altogether a solid, well-put-together score. I shouldn't say that I hated it like I did at the beginning. I just wanted to dramatically introduce that I was disagreeing.
Have you listened to the Deathly Hallows Part 2 score?
No.
It uses a lot more of the original thing. The other day, I actually listened to just all of the scores for all of the movies. And Deathly Hallows Part 2, this one definitely puts in a lot of new music, but Deathly Hallows Part 2, he brings back a lot of old music in it. So I'd be curious to get your opinion on it.
I'll definitely listen to it, but for the, you know, and that's an interesting point that maybe as a whole, because it is, you know, one movie being split into two, it's maybe best consumed as a nearly 5 hour.
This is a long score. Yeah, like he puts in every track in the score. There's a lot
and it's dense and I don't know. I just don't.
But
I just felt kind of edge. I felt like it's the edgelord of the group. It's not, you know.
I don't know about that.
Actually, it's not. It's not been like edgelord. It might be John Williams.
Yeah, it's like Azkaban. It's like I'm not being dark to be dark. It's like it's a.
He's it's a dark movie. It's
perfect. It's a dark movie, and he. I mean, he scores it well.
And it's just, a well put together score. Yeah. To me,
it's just not your cup of tea.
It's. And there's a lot of moments to me that are like, this could be Game of Thrones. This could be.
I did not feel that, but sure.
I'm trying to name other fantasy,
yeah,
orchestrally scored fantasy movies because it's not quite Game of Thrones. It's not quite Lord of the Rings, but there are moments to me that I'm like, oh, yes, this is a fantasy movie.
You're just like, oh, generic fantasy score.
Yeah. Or, oh, yes, this is clearly an adventure scene. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm sure with the images and everything, that it is a layered score that works well together, but I think you got to give credit where credit's due. And I think throwing out John Williams' score for Sorcerer's Stone just because the themes are better used in other films doesn't negate the fact that they were used first there. And it does, you know, hold its place because it is a well-done score. So, yeah. Just when it came down to it, one felt like Harry Potter and one did not for me. So maybe I'm wrong. I'll hand it off to Brett.
My number three is Deathly Hallows Part One.
I was wrong.
Because I can see why you would say it's the edgelord of the group, but it's not. It's just different.
Yes.
Yeah. It fits what the movie is. Mm-hmm. If anything, the edgelord of the group is the fucking guitar shredding and screeching and fireworks from Order yes. of the Phoenix, because that's just edgelord by definition.
True.
But okay. Going into it, I didn't remember the score from part one, and I was expecting it to just be the dark, brooding. Everything's going to sound the same and sound dark and thrilling and brooding and whatever. But I was pleasantly surprised that there was like, I mean, it is all dark and brooding, but it's different. It, like Carter said, it's layered. There's a whole lot going on. There's a whole lot to unpack. There were a couple of moments where, I mean, it is number three, so there were some moments where I was like, okay, like, I think they're running right now. They're sitting around being like, the Horcrux.
What do we do?
Like, you could tell that, but like, yeah, Snape to Malfoy Manor, that I was like, holy.
Let's go.
Damn.
Like, it's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, like, that was real good. And so there were the standouts and just like, yeah, I just thought there was so much going on, but like, it's not without its faults. It's not perfect, as opposed to Sorcerer's Stone, which like started with Hedwig's theme. It's like, okay, yeah, we're here in Harry Potter, and it's like, yep, this is a John Williams score for Harry Potter.
Part of it too is like the Deathly Hallows Part One score that we're actually listening to. They put the full score, so it's the entire score of the movie with like all of the transition pieces and stuff that normally wouldn't be included on like a musical score.
Yeah.
And like, I think
and especially most a soundtrack.
Yeah, most John Williams soundtracks are, he like cuts them down to shorter tracks. And you don't
and
get
it
like
also orders them.
Yeah, and you don't get like every single little transitional piece of music that would happen in the movie. But this is a full score, so you kind of feel the length on it a little more.
Yeah, and like I said, like there's nothing stopping like you guys from, you know, unless anyone wants to change their mind after what I said. But like, I don't know. I just feel like it's. I don't know, the icon, maybe I'm getting caught up in the icon status versus, you know, I do want things to be different, and that's why I rank, you know, Order of the Phoenix and Prisoner of Azkaban over it. But I think it does such a good job, Sorcerer's Stone does such a good job of bringing in and creating those familiar themes that I feel like it's, I don't know, I feel like you guys are discrediting it. I don't, or, you know.
I'll get to my point on it.
Okay. I mean, we can talk about it.
Brett, did you have anything else to say?
I mean, other than the fact that I'm not a big fan of the Sorcerer's Stone score soundtrack because it just, they hammer that Harry Potter theme into you so hard, so much, so often with little to almost no variation at sometimes, and it's just kind of like, I felt like the Sorcerer's Stone soundtrack sounds a lot more like a generic fantasy, generic John Williams score than part one does. But that's just me. I'm sure everyone else here has a little more.
Which, I mean,
analysis.
You know, in its defense, I'm okay sometimes with the repetition of a score with familiarity. You know, like that doesn't necessarily bother me as long as there's other themes to also be worked in that mix of being repeated a lot. I'm not going to say anything about the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, but that's kind of my principle with the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Don't even get me started.
There's a lot of repetition.
I'm about to fight Brett again.
Seven themes that get repeated a lot.
I know,
but anyway.
You guys like that one theme. Here's another theme. Oh, you tired of this one? Let's go back to the first one again. Pirates, baby.
So where I'm at with where I'm at
Carter
with
takes a deep breath, collects himself, and then gets ready to talk about a different score. He's
where
not,
I'm at with Sorcerer's Stone.
Is that the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie?
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Brett,
the
I will jump over this coffee table.
Oh, yeah.
There's expensive equipment.
Oh, yeah.
I will full
gingerly
on.
Step.
Will you carefully just step over?
Carefully step over it, and then hilariously trip on one of the long cords and just face plant on the ground. Yeah.
That'd be fun. Right. Can you do that?
No.
Oh. I don't want you to hurt yourself.
But what I will say about Sorcerer's Stone is this one I think has so. Sorcerer's Stone has both positive and negative for its the nature of being first. So something like production design, it so well establishes a world that if it didn't, then you know the rest of the series couldn't have been as successful as it was. And so that's where being the first, it really excels. Something like score, I think it's the inverse. So the fact that it's the first one and it has to introduce all these themes, it doesn't have the luxury of having past themes to look at and like grow upon and grow beyond. And so it's like, I think I mentioned this in the Star Wars score episode too, but it's like the older the movie is in the series, the harder it is to compare something like that with a later entry, because the later entry has the luxury of having all the previous entries with which to work from and to do something new and better and different. And so it's, yeah, with Sorcerer's Stone, it's like they're all so good in like establishing stuff. But the other thing that I thought was weird was that there are a number of themes in Sorcerer's Stone, like Gringotts and the Diagon Alley and Platform 9 3/4, Mr. Longbottom Flies, Quidditch, you know, just in general, there's like Hedwig's theme and stuff like that. But it's like a lot of these in the Mirror of Eris said and walking around the library and stuff, a lot of these themes, which are really like unique and different within the score, don't come back. Like you don't hear a lot of them in subsequent films, which I thought was weird that they have a lot, or the emotional swelling, like love, when he's reading through the album at the end of the movie. I can't remember which track that was. But like a lot of these you get in this movie and they are distinct from one another, but they never come back again, which I'm like, that's odd. But I think this one, I mean, I like all of these scores. And I think that this one definitely captures the kind of tone and feel of Sorcerer's Stone. It's a very playful score. It is very John Williams-y. I don't necessarily agree with that it sounds like a prequel score. I think you could have a critique for John Williams' scores holistically, as they kind of all sound similar.
Or specific, I would say specifically the scores of the early 2000s.
But
really,
I mean, I think you got like E.T. sounds like Star Wars, sounds like Indiana Jones, sounds like you got a lot of different things that cross over through across his career. That's just he really likes horns. It's where I'm at with it, and I was really kind of upset because I love Sorcerer's Stone, and I maintain that it might be the best Harry Potter every once in a while, and we're not going to get to talk about it in the finale, but
you could change that.
No, I'm not going to.
You could change that, Carter.
Yeah, it suffers by its own nature of not having other movies to grow beyond, and that's where that on that.
I see what you're saying. I don't know if I agree with it, which is, I mean, it's fine, but I don't know if it's not discrediting it because it doesn't have more. It feels like handicapping something.
Well, it kind of is in a way because it just doesn't have the other ones.
Yeah.
And it's not saying that the score is bad. And I mean, he didn't have as many diverse themes because he simply didn't compose them because it was the first one. And so he repeats, you know, Harry's theme multiple times, which is, I mean, hammering it in the first one is why we all know it and remember it and love it, is because we've all heard it so many times for so many years. Yeah. So.
And I get what you're saying. It leaves a somewhat bad taste in my mouth to see such a good score fall by the wayside when I.
Yeah, because they're all. I loved all of these scores.
Yeah. No, I loved 3 out of 4 of these scores, and it's rough, but it's okay.
Such is the plight of the oldest film.
There we go, our ranking. Yes. Number one, we had Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix shredding away. Number two, we had Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban doing its, you know, choral and whatnot. Something Wicked This Way Comes.
This way came
Toad, and then we had Harry Potter and
you took like just a long enough pause before you said Toad where it sounded like you were just saying Toad, mm-hmm. like you were just like pointing it out across the room like oh Toad.
Yes. Late. Well, I also saw the Toad over there.
There's no Toad in my apartment. Don't make these people think I live in squalor.
He doesn't live in squalor. He lives in a swamp.
He lives in a swamp.
We are floating. Yes. We recorded this episode in waders.
Yeah. Deathly Hallows Part 1, number 3. And unfortunately, it's being killed by its own source, touched by an 11-year-old Daniel Radcliffe and turned to dust.
It is called poetic justice.
It is poetic justice. So that's our finalists for the finale next week.
Yeah.
We have 5, 3, and 7.
Interesting.
Interesting.
I did not see us getting
see this happening at
one
all.
One of these I definitely did not expect to get this far, but it'll be interesting, I think.
Just out of curiously, which one?
Order of the Phoenix.
Really?
Consistently have never liked that movie that much, but more talking about it this entire thing, I was like, maybe I do really like this movie, and I just don't know what I'm talking about.
Order of the Phoenix has always been one of my favorites.
Thank you.
I'm happy to see it come this far. I was happy with all 4 we had here.
Yeah,
me too.
And I knew whatever got voted off, we'd still be talking about one of like 3 of the 4 best Harry Potter mm-hmm. movies in the finale.
That's so true.
I could not be happier with the way things have.
This is a good mix. Out.
I feel good about this. We get various levels of dark.
Yes. Right,
yeah. I mean, I feel like I could be slightly happier, but I'm pretty happy. I'm like 95%. So
we're good. Yeah.
Rest in peace, Half-Blood Prince. Always in my heart and my thoughts.
I still have feelings about that, but it's okay.
But yeah, no, I mean, this is a very, very good place to be.
Yes,
yeah.
I think so.
Very
All
good,
right.
good place to be in the season. Let's
go.
Wrap it up.
You can find me on Twitter at CA Spillier. It's like spill something in your yard and add an S. My recommendation this week is one HBO original series, comedy, fantastic. That would be Veep.
Veep.
I think the funniest show on TV right now. They just released their trailer for the final season, and it is the final season. So if you haven't seen it already, and you have HBO, I highly, highly can't recommend enough going back and watching Veep. It's only 30 minutes an episode. Armando Iannucci, who made The Thick of It and In the Loop, The Death of Stalin was his newest film, started it. He left at season 5, 4, something like that. But it's absolutely brilliant. It's one of the movies that I think they asked President Obama once, you know, with Veep and House of Cards and all these movies, like there are all these movies and shows and stuff. Which one's the most like Washington? And he was like, to be real honest, it's Veep. It's like you watch it and it scares you a little bit, but also it is very believable that this probably is the most likely the realist or closest to like Washington politics. And it's just sharp and witty and funny and has some of the greatest, like, I mean, greatest insults of anything ever. The writing on this show, so good. There's a reason Julia Louis-Dreyfus has won like 7 Emmys just for this show. She's a tour de force. Everyone in that show's a tour de force. It's so, so good. And I'm so sad that it's starting its final season, and I'm definitely about to start rewatching it, probably tonight. We'll see. But I'm just so, so ready, and you should all watch it. Shannon?
Hey guys, you can find me on Letterboxd at ZedsDead5 with 2 D's in there. And let's see, this week I'm going to be recommending a film that I got at a Goodwill for like $2 this weekend that I forgot I loved as much as I did. It is 2002's Best Picture winner, Chicago, directed by Rob Marshall.
Ooh, so good. So good.
It does so many things with political commentary, with social satire, with the discourse around injustice and how we make light of it in such a smart way that you forget that it's a musical. And that's for all of you people out there, especially who are not into the musical genre. If you're not, I think you would still really like this film. If you are, you obviously already know about it and really like it. But it's incredibly smart. There are some stellar career-making performances for Catherine Zeta-Jones and Renee Zellweger, respectively. Mm-hmm.
Richard Gere is also really good.
Yes, Richard Gere is absolutely wonderful, not to mention Queen Latifah as the matron, Mama Morton. But it's incredibly smart. There are so many good things in this film, despite the fact that it was a Weinstein Miramax production. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of amazing people who did a lot for this movie and who made it fantastic, and it still deserves our love and appreciation anyway. And they're doing a FX miniseries, I believe, about Fosse and...
Yeah, Bob Fosse and Verdon.
Verdon. That they're the real stars behind Chicago, so if you like what you see in this movie, I'm sure you should definitely give the FX show a shot when it comes out. Yeah. I don't think it's come out yet.
No. It's Sam Rockwell and Michelle Williams.
But it looks fantastic.
It looks very good.
But to get some background, you should definitely watch Chicago.
Chicago is still what I tell people who don't like musicals as people who aren't well-versed in musicals, what they should watch first to jump into the genre, because I don't think that like something like a La La Land is a good starting point.
Yeah,
people
talk about La La Land as like it's a musical for people who don't like musicals, and I'm like, that's not true.
There's
at all.
There's a couple of other ones I think that do even better than that for like the modern idea of it. But
I recommend Chicago as a good starting point because it is so slick. It's so well done. It shows you just what kind of a production it can be. And then I tell you, like, go back and watch the classics, but I mean, Chicago, kind of a modern classic at this point.
Love it.
So good. Good recommendation.
All right. I'm going to be recommending the animated comedy series The Venture Brothers, which is on Adult Swim. It is so funny. It's so good. People say it's underrated. I don't think so. I think it's perfectly rated where it is, but it's great. It's about Hank and Dean Venture, their father Rusty Venture, and their bodyguard Brock Sampson, voiced by Patrick Warburton. And it's just the perfect parody and satire of like the old like Saturday morning cartoons, like Johnny Quest and I'm blanking on the other name of the big one, And then also takes like comic book tropes like arch enemies and superheroes and like mad scientists and just turns everything on its head. And it's just, oh, it's so funny. It's so smart and just makes a whole lot of references you wouldn't expect and just goes to a lot of places you wouldn't expect. Like the last episode I just watched in season 5, 4, I don't remember, but they go on this whole bit about progressive rock and somebody falls into a coma while listening to side B of Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. And it's just, it's wild. It's a good show. So there you have it.
Fantastic. I'm Robbie DeShazer. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Robbie_DeShazer. You can also, if you're in the Austin area, I'm going to self-pub for a second. March 5th at Cold Town Theater, you can come see me perform with, do some improv and stuff like that. So if you're in town around March 5th at 8:30 p.m., stop on by Cold Town Theater. That being said, my recommendation this week is the BBC America original production, Killing Eve. If you haven't watched it, you probably know someone who has watched it, and they're telling you to watch it, and you're dragging your feet thinking, I don't know if I want to see this. It's so good.
It is really good.
The words lesbian spy thriller doesn't like just make you want to watch something. I don't know.
Do like the Why are you
listening to this podcast if those words together?
It's very good.
It's fantastic. Sandra Oh is a national treasure to the country of Canada. Phoebe Waller-Bridge wrote and directed a lot of the episodes.
She's the creator.
Did she direct every episode, or did she?
No, she wrote all the episodes.
She wrote all of them. She's the creator.
She's the showrunner and creator.
She does a fantastic
job. She just made Fleabag, which is also very good.
Fleabag, check also good. Maybe another recommendation for another time.
And she's L3 in Solo: A Star Wars Story. So there's that.
Go check it out. The new season comes out in April, so it's more than enough time to watch 8 45-minute-long episodes of television.
Mm-hmm. They're all on Hulu?
They're all on Hulu. They're probably
it's gonna air on BBC's
iPlayer if you have access to that.
It's going to be on AMC and BBC America when
simulcast
it starts airing again.
Brand synergy.
If you have both, it's kind of pointless, but it's fine.
I don't know.
Pick which commercials you like more.
Yeah. There you go. If you like Doctor Who reruns before your...
I'm waiting for the announcement of Talking Eve. Won't surprise me if they do it.
They could do it. I would watch it.
With Chris Hardwick?
I was about to say it depends on who hosts. I'd watch, what's her face? Shirley from Community.
Oh, you meant Nicole Brown?
Yes. I couldn't think of her.
She's great.
I would watch her host Talking Eve.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. She almost replaced Hardwick, so maybe that would have gotten me to watch those shows.
Would it?
I mean, I'd have
eight seasons in, would you start watching The Walking Dead?
I might have watched Talking with Yvette Nicole Brown, like if they just gave his whole just late night show to her.
It is what it is.
Yep.
Irregardlessly, that's our episode. Thank you so much for listening.
For a whole year.
Thank you. I don't know if anyone has stuck it out the entire year from beginning to end. If you have, I'm sorry.
I think there's a handful of people.
I hope so. But yes, we're much better now than we were when we started. We've learned a lot.
We have.
We've gotten better.
We've learned a shorter intro sequence.
A gooder amount. Like, you know... We don't bicker as much.
We don't. And some people get mad about that.
Which, you know, I feel like we could have more fighting, but it's not like bickering. So it's fine. We'll work on it.
I'm glad we don't get caught up in technicalities and rules anymore.
But please stay tuned for next week's episode, the finale. We might have a special guest.
We're working on it.
Who knows?
But
that's it. Go to bed.
Yeah. Thank you. Stop listening to this. Right now.
Petrificus Total.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we are so glad you took the time to listen to ours. Thank you to Brett Johnson, Robbie DeShazer, and Shannon Widener for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen. It really does help get the word out. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Film Fracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode.